Picture this, 100 days surviving alone in the wilderness of northern Saskatchewan, Canada, building your own shelter, hunting your own food, nothing but your thoughts and the bears to keep you company. Luke was in season 10 of Alone. It's a show that's on History Channel and also on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen it, but the contestants go out literally alone into a remote wilderness area to survive on their own. And whoever lasts the longest wins $500,000. Now, Luke didn't win, but he had an incredible experience. Not only that, but he's had a lifetime of survival experiences. So he's going to sit down today and talk to us about circadian rhythms, getting back in touch with your primitive nature, what it's like to actually have to hunt for your own food and how that feels and what that can do for your brain and your mental health, as well as your physical health. So he also works with kids, so he's going to talk about introducing wilderness survival to children and the potential of bringing that into like a standardized curriculum, which I think would be amazing. So thanks so much for being here. Aloha, Luke. What's up, man?
Aloha, Brother Bear. It's been a minute.
I know. It's really good to see you. I was so proud to see you represented in Alone. I was like so pumped when to see you up there and representing Hawaii and the vibes. So that was awesome, bro.
Ah, such a great adventure, man. Like, yeah, once in a lifetime opportunity for sure.
I bet. That seems like a crazy thing to go off and do. Like, wow. I had no idea that you had so much training in survival, like just growing up and stuff. But it was cool to learn about that. Was that one of the like more difficult experiences you've had, like being out in nature and like sort of doing your own
survival? Oh, definitely not. Okay. Yeah, definitely had, you know, it was difficult and trying, but we had a lot of gear in that situation on Alone that we were able to take, right? 10 items actually adds up to quite a bit on top of all the clothing and stuff that they take as well. So definitely well geared and prepared for the situation. And then the place was super abundant.
Right.
So definitely been in more difficult situations for sure.
Like what? I'd love to hear some maybe like one of the more difficult situations you've been in.
Yeah, definitely. So the desert trekking can be really difficult. So we've done a lot of that in Arizona and Idaho and Utah, where there's like long periods between water holes, or you're like drinking really stagnant, nasty water out of like the hoof prints of cows or, you know, cattle feeding stations and irrigation stations and stuff like that. So those are just like really mentally trying and physically trying as well.
Did you do a lot of training leading up to Alone?
So that was my first experience in that environment, like up in the Boreal on a huge lake. So I'd never done any like big lake fishing like that or anything. But, you know, there's a lot of crossover. I spent a lot of time on the ocean in Baja and out here in Hawaii doing a lot of fishing there. A lot of salmon fishing in the mountains in Idaho. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of crossover. But, yeah,
that it seemed like you weren't having any issues like catching fish. Like it seemed like you were.
I did some studying about that area while we were waiting around for flights and things to leave the towns. I went into gear shops and asked the local people like what lures they were using and, you know, what successful spots looked like, and just got as much information from the locals as I could. And then when I got out there, I just recreated that most common lure that I saw across all the shops that people were like, this is the one, you know?
So. Oh, yeah. Nice. And that seemed to work pretty well.
Yeah, I could basically just spend an hour or two in the evening, like sunset time seemed to be the good fishing hours, and catch two or three and be done for the day. That was really all I could carry back from my fishing spot to my camp, because it was a little bit of a treacherous hike along the cliffs there. So.
Wow. That's so you've been kind of in those situations a lot in your life. I mean, you've been out just done
like I spent you know, 7 years or so working for the Anasazi Foundation, Core Discovery, Walkabout, a bunch of different wilderness treatment programs that take, you know, troubled youth and adults into the wilderness for 40 to 60 days at a time to give them that an alone-like experience, you know, and have those trial by natures and overcome those things, and lots of reflection time and just as a therapy.
That's pretty cool. Is there like any like stories that really stand out for you and during that time with Anasazi that you want to share?
Yeah, you know, there's a theme that happened in those programs like over and over and over again. So there's a lot of stories that apply to this, but you know, just watching hearts change and mindsets change. Through just a really short period of time for how much personal growth and development happens. So usually like with adolescent teens that come out, they've been like abducted from home or taken out of school or whatever to show up there. And, you know, they're usually pretty angry about it. They're there against their will. And so there's all this anger that they're working through for the first couple weeks.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they finally really land there and accept where they are and everything and what it's going to be and start getting into the experience. And their attitude changes from this like extreme anger of, I want to just hurt something or, you know, get back at my parents for sending me here or like lash out in some way. By the end of the program, when their parents are coming out or their, you know, family members are coming out to spend the last 3 or 4 days with them out there, their concerns are how they're going to create a campsite that's comfortable for their parents, how they're going to feed their parents while they're there, like how they're going to take care of the people around them. And just that, you know, 180 degree switch from hating everything about their life to like cherishing it so much. It's just this common story out there.
Do you think that your camera turned off, by the way? I don't know if that's just...
Yeah, I think my phone timed out. Here, there we go.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to turn off this thing, too.
I wonder how I can stop that from timing out.
There you go. Oh, you're back. Do you think that that happened because people are like up against adversity, like out in the wilderness, or more because they like see the rawness of nature and it's like that element that makes them realize like the value of things, like, or is it a combo?
You know, it's not always trying. Like some students come out and have just the time of their life and it's just this amazing experience that they cherish itself, and it's not this like experience of suffering to bring, but the same thing happens, right? So I don't really lean towards that, you know, suffering creates a perception of joy about the things around, you know, gives you a relative perspective there. Yes, that can happen with some people as part of it, but I don't think it's the big mover there. I think it's falling back into like our natural circadian rhythms, super clean diet, away from all the stimulation of technology, the social bombardment that we have in our lives all the time, and back to like our true natural chemistry that's happening in us, and like chasing your food every day and appreciating it when you are successful. And just that rhythm that you get into after time, you're thinking more clearly, you're seeing what's important, you're seeing the true value of things again, right? And you haven't been overstimulated to this point of like not being able to interpret the world around you correctly.
Totally. That's one of the big intentions of like why I'm doing this podcast in general, is because I really want to bring different awareness to people about how different people around the world live their life. And so I try to kind of bring in, you know, people from indigenous communities or
People that have kind of opted to do it a different way than maybe what is like standard, just to help people to see that there are options in how to live our life. Because right now, I feel like we're all sort of pushed into this like, you have to make money, you have to work a job you hate, you have to sacrifice your passions or whatever for other thing, all the things that we're sort of like pushed into in our lives. And I feel like that's created a culture where we don't have as much of an identity. And what I find is like in different kinds of communities, especially when it like when you're sort of like connected more to nature, when there's this sort of like built-in belief that the natural world is there to protect us, to take care of us, and like there's a nurturing element, and it's like it's not like man versus nature, it's man with nature, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's
And
absolutely like what we're wired for. You know,
yeah.
we've been doing that a lot longer than we've been doing what we are doing now, right? And
Right.
so our chemistry that we get from success in that situation versus this like virtual success, say of like having likes on something, or it's we're totally wired for catching a fish, or for eating a meal over a fire, or for sitting out a rainstorm in our dry shelter. And those successes give us so much more gratitude than this artificial stuff that we've created.
Right. And you see that like when just even with my kids, like if I build a fire or something, and they just like it's just you auto there's an automatic thing that happens when like your kid first sees a campfire that is just it's like almost built into your DNA. Like they just you know what I mean? And it was like it's like the original television, or
Yeah,
something.
absolutely. Yeah.
And same with every like I try to get my kids like really learn about the stars or study like the way trees work or and there's always this like I feel like there's a knowing that we're sort of built in with about it connecting to the
Yeah.
world.
Well, it's incredible how much, I don't know what you want to call it, but like ancestral memory or genetic memory that we really do have. One of my great friends and mentors, David Holliday, teaches a class called ABO 101 at a lot of primitive skills gatherings and everything. And it just emphasizes throughout the whole class, nobody can speak, right? So we're taking it back all the way to like as primitive as we can conceive of man operating. We take away all their tools, take away their clothes, nobody can speak. And then the instructor, David Holliday, sets them out on a journey, right? He speaks to them, of course, sets them out on a journey, but they have to communicate with each other through just body language and grunts and pointing and accomplish all these tasks with no tools and so on. And it's incredible what people come up with on their own without instruction is what we did in that era of time through archaeological study. Like we remember it. We know it.
Yeah, right.
It's not something that we have to relearn.
What do you, what, like, I'm curious, like, I don't know, this maybe is going to get a little far out, but I just, it makes me, like, what are your belief systems? Like, do you believe that we are, that there's this, like, inherent connection that we all share with each other? Like, do what, I'd love to hear more about like the things that like keep you going like spiritually in those moments, where it's like you're out in nature. Like, do you feel like the natural world's like, I don't know, Mother Nature? Like, what's your take on sort of God and spirituality in all of this?
Right. Well, I've definitely been working with the kids a lot here in Maui, at a great outdoor program here. And so it's given me a fresh opportunity to observe like that curiosity of children and nature, right? They're outdoors, rain or shine. And that constant curiosity and constant learning and constant growth and change is like so apparent to me throughout all of nature, right? And the kids are just such a like personal representation of it towards for us, right? But that observable, repetitive thing that happens is constant change, constant growth. And so that's kind of how I have to put my framework of God. It has to work in that situation, right? It can't be this like forever being or forever idea or anything like that. Like it's definitely under constant
Because it's
change,
constantly
like everything
changing, it's
else.
constantly expanding, it's constantly growing, it's always different, always learning. There's always something new, right? Always some new discovery.
And things are constantly changing form. And so that's another one of the things that like most ideas of spirituality bring into the spirit, which is supposed to be this like everlasting kind of entity, or your identity. And in nature, you just don't see that anywhere. You see all life forms, doing their cycle, and then it decomposes and changes into new life, all and branches out into billions of new lives, not any single entity or anything. It's not reincarnation, it's not any of those ideas. It's this almost omnipresence through individuality, right? Like we have these glimpses of time that we're experiencing as these individuals, but in the large scale, we're part of a larger life system, a bigger entity, right? And that's what I like to think of as God, as like that the entity that encompasses all the experience that's happening, right?
Right. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I love that. I mean, I 'cause I that's kind of my whole thing has always been with, observing the world around us, and that's the way that we learn how to communicate with the spirit, right? It's like all here. And the more that I get to study sort of like indigenous people's ways, and it's not really like a religion, but it's just like a way of being. There's like, everything's in the circle, and there's the mental, emotional, spiritual, physical self, and it's sort of like connected to the directions and the cycles of life, and everything kind of cycles around in these circles. So if anybody, for example, in the community is like suffering physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually, then we all are, because we're all connected, because we're all in the same circle. Like there's no way to like sort of disengage yourself from that and be like, well, I'm fine and they are screwed up. No, they're part of you too, and so we're all together, and so that's kind of like a sort of a theme that goes throughout all most of sort of those belief systems. And that's something I really connect with. The more I learn about it, the more I feel like, well, that was just kind of natural for me growing up, how I learned things, and I've always felt that way. And sort of there's this other story where it's like we're in kind of like a win-lose story, where there's like winners and then there's losers. And that story didn't seem like that's not kind of how it works to me. I mean, but at the end of the day, I guess there are predators that eat their prey, and that's reality too. But then again, we're all part of the same cycle. So I don't know, it's an interesting,
That's
different way of looking at things,
one of the greatest parts of the wilderness experience is chasing your dinner, right? Is like getting connected with your food source again in a way that it really makes you contemplate a lot of those things and digest them. Like, okay, well, I'm like killing this whole other experience that's happening. It's just gone, it's ended, and it's, feeding this experience that I'm having. And the reverence and the appreciation that happens when you actually chase it down and bring it to your table, like, is so different than going to the store or the restaurant or even having mom cook you a great meal. It's like it's a whole other level of inward looking and contemplation that happens with every
I
satisfying,
mean, it's
nourishing bite, right?
and it's like I mean, they talk about like also health wise that that's the kind of thing that we're missing, is like that being really hungry and then like having to actively go get your meal, like just using your body and like physically being, because we're in this sort of sedentary existence where you're sitting a lot and then it's like we don't have to hunt and you just like go to the fridge and you get your thing, you know, and it's like
Yeah, you can just like be bored and eat. Yeah, it's wild how we live and how luxurious it is. But yeah, the one meal a day, chase your dinner, and how it turns on other parts of your brain and how healthy that is for just your cognitive everything. It's amazing. We are meant to be hungry, right? Like we optimize when we're hungry. For reasons, right? That's
Yeah, I mean, we
how
have
you
to problem solve. We have to survive. We have to figure out how we're going to eat, right? So it's
Yeah.
like, I'm going to get really good at this. And I mean, clearly we did as a species get super good at like figuring the food thing out because now we just like have an overwhelming amount of it. But you know, it's interesting that you know, bringing that element into it. I think there's also like just moments where you feel like the awe of nature, you know. And I remember actually in Maui, I remember being on the doing the whale boat, and that was like a moment where people would show up and then not even know what to expect, and then they would see these whales, and all of a sudden, just everything would just break open in their brain. Like I would see, I remember seeing people just turn into tears and being like, "What am I doing with my life?" And like just have like whole epiphanies.
No,
Just
yeah.
in seeing how massive and beautiful and graceful these whales are, and how they kind of like lovingly communicate with each other, and you can almost see it and you feel it, you feel their presence, and
And they have this like global environment that they're operating in, and there's just like such a big creature. Somehow we identify like the size of something matters to us. I don't know what the science is behind it, but we can
yeah.
slap a mosquito with zero remorse. But by the time you get up to elephants and whales, there's this like huge reverence, right?
Right.
Yeah, so there's something about that we identify with size, but and mammals then especially, whales being like this
And
massive
maybe it's just the
mammal,
power and awe of nature. I mean, you know, I've definitely been
yeah.
in those moments where like the ocean is a little formidable and I'm out on a little boat on these waves, like, oh shit, this is, you know, this is getting real.
Yeah.
And I've had those moments where the windstorm kicks up or you're in a sandstorm and it's like, yeah, dude, there's nothing you're gonna do to not have sand in every crevice of your body in that moment. And when you kind of confront those moments, there's a sort of awe of nature too that is like, all right, you know, there's not much you're gonna be able to do when a tidal wave comes or whatever, you know, in that moment,
Right, you're
you know.
experiencing your raw planet, that we're
Right.
on instead of the box that we've created on top of it.
Yeah, and I think that's helpful to people too, to like shake your awareness that, like, you know, for people that are maybe struggling or like you said in the program, people that have kind of gone through hardship in their life and looking for some other change, just to like experience that, like go on a whale boat, see the Grand Canyon, whatever giant natural you know, awe-inspiring experience, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, so much grew out of just that awe. It wasn't just our, need for better tools and more food and progression that we've done that. Like art, most of religion, everything
Right.
is like grown out of that awe of nature that we have, and kids have it like the
Yeah.
best, because they have the awe of everything. But
Right.
yeah, staying in that awe is powerful.
That's the key. So tell me more about this school is it something that you are a founder of, or is it like
Nope.
your
Osiris is this my son Osiris is a student there. It's a homeschool enrichment program.
Okay.
So there's about 40 kids ranging from like 5 to 13, I think. And yeah, they go to a different place on the island every single day. And so we have to truck them around a little bit, but they go to amazing, beautiful places to experience nature. They have awesome teachers that are well versed in all the Hawaiiana and history of this place and what the Hawaiian connection to everything is. And yeah, he's just getting to absorb a beautiful spot every day in a really playful environment. And we love it. So I teach primitive skills there 2 days a week. And yeah, love all those kids. They're super inquisitive and
What
super
kinds of things
capable.
do you teach in primitive skills, like how
Yeah, a
to
lot of
hunt?
knife skills, traps, fire, how to cook on a fire, shelter, because they're out there, rain or shine. So in winter, especially up in the Mockwell Forest area and just certain places, it's like usually rainy. So we're doing a
This
big
gets
shelter
rained a lot.
project. And so they're learning lots of knots and yeah, all kinds of fun stuff. Everything it takes to just be out there every day.
That sounds awesome, dude. I wonder why, that is not, it's not even remotely part of any education system right now,
Yeah, right.
Like, this
I think
is
that,
not something that is taught.
right. Well, I think, our standard education system is great. It's just a little bit out of order. Like that early childhood development where we're, pushing reading and basic math and all that stuff as like
Sorry, you cut out there for a sec.
Yeah, sorry, my phone rang. So early childhood development, preschool to 12 years old. When we're trying to push academia down these kids' throats and making them sit at a desk in a room and like follow a schedule and all these things, it's just like you're crushing the curiosity like era of their life, right? Like that's when they need to be learning things on their own, self-guided education, and just put them in situations that are going to spark their curiosity about anything. It doesn't matter then. And naturally, they're going to learn basic math. They're going to learn how to read. Like if you spark their curious mind, right? Then they're going to want to know more. They're going to need those skills and they're going to go after it on their own. And they do, right? But
There's
then
actually a really cool movie right now out called Radical, which we just saw in the theater, and it's about this teacher in like kind of south of Brownsville, Texas, in Mexico. There was like some really impoverished schools that were like in the ghetto or whatever, just struggling. And it was about this kind of science teacher who came in, and exactly what you're saying. He was like, well, how do boats float? Like, how do you know if because there was like this kind of fat principal guy, and they were like, oh, Gordo. They're like, well, if he gets on the boat, it's gonna sink. And like, well, why do you know? How do you know that? Like, why does that make sense? Is he really gonna sink? But don't like don't like people that have more fat on their body, don't they float better on water? So why would it make sense that he's he's asking all these questions, and it's got really interesting where they had to figure it out themselves, and exactly what you're saying, like
Yeah, asking
spark their
questions that spark their
curiosity to where
curiosity.
And it was really cool this movie too, because then they were like, well, let's go look at a computer. And they didn't have one. And the computer lab was like gutted because whatever, the cartel took all the computers and sold them or whatever. And so they didn't even have computers, and the library sucked. And so they just didn't have it. And they were like, well, we got to figure it out some other way. How are we going to do it? And I love that approach, right? I mean, that's kind of like your naked example of just being out and having to grunt and like problem solve, but maybe that's a little extreme. But also, like, I do things like that to myself. Like, I don't use GPS all the time. I'll be like, oh, I think I remember how to get there. Whatever, I'm just gonna go. Like, I don't, we get sort of, my daughter does it to me too, because we'll try to think of something and I'll go to my phone and she'll be like, no. You can't use technology. We have to figure it out. Give us at least 5 minutes more, And I love it. I'm like, she's teaching me, but yeah, that's something that maybe, it's nice to have at your fingertips all this information, but maybe, and in some ways it's a little bit of a crutch because it feels like there's nothing left to discover,
Sure.
Like
It's difficult to try to run around in a modern world without modern tools, right? And so sometimes like we have to embrace those things when we're in that environment, but then just remember that it's a new environment for our species and we need to relax from it once in a while and go back to our roots and like experience that stuff without those tools in it as well.
Yeah, I had another guest on who was like a personal trainer kind of guy, but he got really into like primitive athletics, basically primitive like training to how you get your body fit. And
Cool.
his number one thing to do is like basically take off your shoes and run around and play with your kids. Like that's like a great workout. And he's like, you get a great workout, it's really fun, you know, just like be as physical as you can, run around, you know.
Right.
And it's kind of obvious, but it's sort of like we don't think along those lines. We don't just do the obvious sometimes, you know. We have to like go to a gym. You know,
Totally.
it's like, oh, I can't work out, I don't have a gym. Well, do you know where there's grass or something?
Yep.
So it's kind of a silly we maybe got ourselves stuck in that pattern. So
Yeah. You know, well, there's definitely, you know, the alone experience. I've done a lot of expeditions before that, right? 40 and 80 day expeditions for those companies, Core Discovery and Anasazi and everything. And so I'd gone through like certain types of you know, preparation, and then through the, you know, deprivation through the experience, and then recovery, right? But the alone experience, having like no food pack, relying 100% off the environment for your calories, and then not only the experience of it, but watching the 9 previous seasons and studying what people were going through when they go into that shock of coming from this modern abundant world into that calorie deprived type scenario, which I didn't actually fall into when I got there, but I had, that was my biggest concern about going into it. And but all the study and information that we have now, you know, 10 seasons plus all the out you know, crossover ones to other countries and everything, has brought a lot of data to the table about what the body goes through and how it optimizes and how quick you can drop excess and toxins out of your system. And right, like how fast that can really happen, and then you hit this plateau where you're optimized, and you can stay there for a long time before it starts to get, you know, decline drastically. But before that, before this show and like this experience, all we've, the studies we've really have come from like the Holocaust and things like that, where like we just
That's
happened upon camps where people were starving, we start feeding them, and then they get into all this trouble because now they're eating sugar and eating carbohydrates and all these things that they didn't have access to for so long that now it's like toxic to the body, right? Where we've like conditioned
Wild.
ourselves to it, you know?
Yeah. I didn't even think about like that kind of coming back and, you know, eating. Were there things that you craved out there? Like, were you like, oh, I wish I had some chocolate, and like, you have
Yeah.
those moments.
You know, definitely, yeah, sugar and carbohydrates, because I had an abundance of blueberries, but they're super low glycemic and not a lot of carbs in them as well. There's not much to them. So you're basically living off of protein and fat, right? Which I was lucky enough that fish has tons of good amino acids and good fats, and I was boiling all the heads and eating the brains and getting everything I needed. But that's what your body's craving is carbohydrates and sugars for a
Is the
long time.
sugar?
Yeah. So
That's
yeah, pasta, chocolate, you know, those are your cravings for sure.
Wow, that's crazy. What and was it like really? I mean, it sounds like a lot of maybe your other experiences, you weren't actually totally alone. Was it weird to be it's just you out there? Was that like another
Yeah,
weird
it's
part
super
of it?
wild. I'd never done anything like that before.
I mean, I know you as like a total communal dude. Like, you'd be like, let's all caravan out to the woods. And like, we take like 30 people instead of a camp.
Yeah, Delia says that when I'm with 20 people is when I'm alone.
Right. Yeah, right, that's your alone. Right. That's
yeah, it was super wild. For the first few days, I was, anytime I'd see something cool or have an idea about something cool, I would go to share it with somebody and nobody was there. and then I pretty much stopped talking for like a week. And then they came out and did like a med check and got my cards and everything and reviewed some stuff and told me like, hey, like you have to narrate
what you're doing.
You can't just do it all. You have to tell us what you're doing. Like, right. Okay.
Right.
Just because there's nobody here doesn't mean there's not 35 million people here with you right now. You know? So it's like,
that's a trip. That's a trip. Yeah. So it was like kind of like a med check and a sort of producer meeting of like, hey,
they collect all your cards that you've recorded onto and give you fresh batteries. And then they do like a quick, like 5 minute interview. And they just want you to like recap you the last like however long since they've seen you, 10 days or 15 days or whatever.
Right.
And so you recap so that they kind of know what they're looking for in the footage, right? You lay out kind of a storyline of what happened and then they can put it all together.
Right.
And so they had collected that on like day 4 or 5. They had we had a COVID test that we had to take.
Oh, okay.
And so they came out and they collected those first 4 or 5 days worth of cards. And then they came out again on like day 15 or something. And they're like, hey, thanks from the previous ones that we reviewed. You got to start talking.
That's so funny. So, yeah, I mean, I guess if you didn't have to be on camera, you probably would just not talk for that whole time. Right. I mean,
I definitely like surprised myself a couple times. In, you know, from day 5 to day 15 or whatever, I'd be like, wow. And when I'd see something great, you know, and hearing my own voice was strange.
It's weird.
And you're like,
did you feel like your mind kind of got really like less chatty too? Like, did you feel like your mind was like a little out of control, like all over the place or where?
No, it's really great environment for deep meditation and like losing all of that chatter. You're just sitting picking blueberries, or you're throwing your hand line, you're mending your gill net, and that's what's happening, you know. It's really conducive to that for sure,
to like total 100% like situational awareness.
Which was actually at certain points exhausting in itself, right? Like I noticed a few evenings and during the day too, picking blueberries, which was, I'd spent a lot of hours picking blueberries, and it's a deep meditation that you get into when you're just like head down doing your thing, but your ears and your senses are totally aware of what's around you, because blueberries mean bears. Right. And that's a great opportunity. I know that they're doing the same thing I'm doing this time of year. And, you know, getting one of those is a win. So you're just 100% open to that opportunity all the time and trying to be as aware as you can of this super stealthy creature that you're in their home turf. They're probably going to notice you before you notice them. And then you've missed your opportunity. Yeah. And so you're just like hyper vigilant in that aware state, which can be exhausting too. There's a few nights I was like, I got to turn this off because I need to get some really good sleep, you know?
Yeah.
And not be so aware. Because
you're just constantly like making sure all your peripherals open and you're scanning everything, you know, see any sort of forms of life just popping up around wherever, right?
Yeah. You like naturally tune into the same thing that, you know, the any other prey animal is or tuning into, right? When you're the predator, they're looking for the same thing. They're smelling, listening, and looking for movement, right? Everything's so incredibly camouflaged to its environment. You're not going to see it unless it moves, and you're most likely going to hear it or smell it before you see it.
Right. Did you feel a little bummed about how things turned out with like getting sick out there and stuff? I mean,
Oh, for
you know.
sure, man.
Yeah.
I think about it a lot. It was definitely a really low moment. If they're trying to deal with my really messy sleeping bag and still having extreme diarrhea and a fever, I was just like going through a lot. In hindsight, if I could have held on for a few more days, I would have gotten better and then pushed through that, which would just added to my experience. Who knows what would happen after that, but I would have had more time out there
Was
for sure.
it your decision to leave, or was it there? Were they like, hey, you're kind of, was it like a
No, it was
medical
my
call or?
decision. It was my
Okay.
decision. Yeah, totally. And yeah, like I said, it was just like a super low point. I'd given it a couple days of just being super sick, and it was getting worse. And so I was like, yeah, in my mind, I just kind of talked myself into like, what's this worth if you're not going to be able to go for with this huge setback that this is, you know, several
Right.
days of no food procurement. And you know, no work getting done, and eating through, you know, a fair amount of my food stash, and then, boom, being sick—that sick after I had the accident was because I was sick for, I had the runs for 6 days before it got really bad, before I got fevered and all that, and I think that was just because of the change in diet. I was macking tons of blueberries, and
Right.
tons of fish
Your
oil and
body,
fish
so there's a
grains.
certain amount of like detox that's gonna kick in, I'm
You're
sure.
right. Yep.
And that detox doesn't always feel good. It feels a lot of time like you're sick. You can go through like the flu detox, they call it, or something like
Right.
that.
Well, it was
Detox
just
flu.
like I had the runs, you know,
But it
for
was,
like
but you
6
also got
days.
some sort of like
Yeah, and then
giardia or something, do you think it was, or?
no, I don't think it was Giardia. I suspected that while I was out there because I had had the runs for like 6 days and then it got really bad and fevered and all this. I was like, oh no, I'm getting sicker and sicker. But now I think they were two separate incidences. It was like I had the runs
One.
from this huge change in diet, and then I got food poisoning, which made me really sick for 3 days. But then I
So
was
you think
over
it
it.
was food poisoning? Did you get over it pretty quick after you came back?
Yeah, like 2 days back at base camp, and I was over it. And I was like, what? Like, I thought it was way more serious. I could have, yeah, chilled out in my camp for a couple of days and made it work. Sleeping bag was a
Yeah.
big issue still.
Because you would have to clean it all and dry it all and all that shit, but you could have
Which I
figured it
did
out.
back at base camp, and it was quite a chore, and I've racked my brain how I would have accomplished that out there. And I don't know, it would have been
Yeah.
pretty. It was definitely going to add some suffering to my experience having to deal with that sleeping bag for the rest of it, for sure.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's crazy, man.
I
Yeah,
felt super
I was
accomplished
like
in
bummed for you
my
because
whole
you
scenario
had
out
the
there.
nice house all built out there, and it looked like you had like the chimney and everything, the underground. I mean, that seemed like the way to go. I didn't see anybody else digging in like
I gotta
that.
tell you that story, Bear. So, okay, we get to this place. They're like, you can bring 10 items, right? And here's a general area of where we're going, but we're not going to tell you exactly where. And so I'm studying that area, and it's like rock with moss and trees on top. There's like no dirt to most of these islands out there. It's just rock.
Whoa.
Right? And so they're like, you can bring like 14 or 15 items to base camp and then narrow it down once you get there. So I bring the shovel as one of my items to base camp, and we're visiting all these little islands around the lodge, and they're, you know, introducing us to the territory, and only one of these spots that we go to has any type of like sand or dirt or beach or anything to it, right? The
Yeah.
rest are just these rock mounds with trees growing out of them. Just horrible
Right.
spots with like a 2-foot-thick layer of moss on top of the rocks. Right? So it feels like you're on the ground, but you're not. And But there's crazy blueberries growing out of the moss, right?
Crazy.
It's the wildest terrain. And so I'm like, we're all lined up. We're playing this game that puts us in a line to select our locations that we go to. And we walk up to this plate of cookies and select a cookie with a stick in it, and it has the name of your location. So it takes like an hour and a half to play this game, this like Viking. So we play this game, and the whole time we're playing this game, I had already selected a shovel as one of my items because I was like, that's the way to do the shelter here, is to dig in if you have a spot that you can,
right? Right.
And so I'm risking it, and I'm taking the shovel as one of my items, and the whole time we're playing this game, I'm chanting out loud and in deep meditation saying, beach, 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 like the whole time. And everybody around me is like, what are you doing, dude? Like, and I'm just like, I'm doing my thing. I'm going to get a beach. Like, I go for it. So I end up in the line, you know, there's 10 of us, and the game that we played, like, put us in the order in the line of when we can go select our cookie. Right. So I'm like near the end of it, and I walk up and I grab my cookie, I pull it out, and it says Bear Paw Beach. And I was like, dude, everybody was just like, what in the world? You know, like called in exactly what I wanted. I wanted bear sign and I wanted a beach. Like,
that's awesome.
I was like, that's how you're gonna win this game, is digging in and getting a bear. So
that's classic. Oh yeah, that was the key, the bear and the dig in. But you did have a bear there, but you didn't, you obviously realized it was like a mother and cub, and I guess that's not.
Yeah, it ended up being, so on day 3 I saw a big bear. I think it was the same sow that I saw day 21. But the cubs weren't with her, and they were like yearling cubs that were like, I'm assuming they were like off and on with her, like just weaning away from her that winter.
Okay.
Because they weren't like little cubs, right? They were like year old. But yeah, if they're accompanying, if they're together, then you can't hunt any of them.
Right. If there's a mother with cubs, you can't
hunt them. Yeah, of any age, right?
Right.
And so I hunted her on day 3, but she saw me. I was winded right, and I came in from the right direction and everything, but I must have made some sound, and she saw me, so then I had to take a pretty long shot.
Yeah.
45 yards or something. Too far.
Yeah.
But then, day 21, she came back as I was hiking back out to the beach, and she didn't see me. I was able to get a lot closer, but I was super fevered. I was like, it was super cold out, and I was just sweating, like,
just you were drenched, just a mess.
You know, I was a mess, bro. I was super fevered, and I had shit the sleeping bag the night before, and then they didn't show it, thankfully, but I had another accident that day.
Yeah.
And so I was just like down to like my long johns and sweating and hunting bears.
Oh my God.
But I figured, if I stick an arrow in this bear, then I'll wait this out and go for it. I'll use the bear rug instead of my sleeping bag.
Right. You feel like living in a bear. Oh man, that's crazy. So what did you, like, do you still have, like, connections with all the other contestants and stuff? You guys still, like, chat and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so there's a couple chat groups. There's, like, one that's just the 10 of us from season 10. And then there's a bigger one that's, I think, like, 100 of us from all the seasons now. And
wow,
that's cool. So there's daily interaction with all those cats. Bunch of really cool people. ITV America did a great job like sourcing a bunch of really unique individuals, for sure.
I love it. Yeah. Is your so you mentioned your dad a lot in the show, and like, so growing up, did you learn a lot of this stuff, like, just from childhood? Or
Yeah, so my dad was an anthropologist and started the Anasazi Foundation in Arizona, taught at Brigham Young University. So my whole life growing up, he was teaching people these skills, right?
Yeah.
And so I have just observed a lot of that and got put on the spot a lot by him in classes and things to demonstrate skills and
Oh,
all,
wow.
yeah, just growing up,
Did
absorbed it.
you, when did you first like shoot a bow and stuff like that?
Young.
Really young.
So my dad started the Rabbit Stick Rendezvous, which is a big primitive skills gathering in Idaho that happens every September. When I was like 3 or
Wow.
so, yeah, right around then, so before I can remember. So we would go spend a week there every year with a bunch of like-minded people and
Nice.
craft everything that we could and do all the skills as a huge tribe there versus then when I was 5 he started the Anasazi Foundation, so then it was a daily thing teaching classes and everything, but it was to other in a therapy setting, right?
That's, I mean, that's really cool. That's like, I, you know, I'm too like urban. I live in the city and I'm like thinking about my kids, like, okay, you know, I don't know. It's like they really know their way around the
Right?
iPad right now,
Hey, it's skills
but
for their environment that they're in, right?
yeah, I gotta, what would you like, what do you recommend for, you know, parents to like try to get their kids a little bit more in that spirit or something, you know?
Yeah.
To go
Well,
camping or just go like, you know,
I've noticed that,
spend
like,
time.
post-COVID and the lockdown and everything, like, definitely reset a lot of people's awareness of how much they value the outdoors and encourage a lot of people to pursue that stuff again, people that were already into it and new people. And so campsites have all gotten really busy. Like all those activities now, it's like you try to go get away from people and it seems packed.
It's
Like
packed.
that's
I
where
know.
everybody's at, right?
Like you go to the, we go out to the canyon and go hiking and like the whole parking lot's full and you gotta park down the street or whatever. And, you know, that's, yeah. When during COVID, I was taking Sophia like pretty much every weekend. That's all we did. And my wife was, pregnant at the time too. So like, she just needed like, okay, just take the kid, you
Get
know,
out of
let's give
here,
me some
right?
space. Yeah. So I'd go and I just, we would hike all the time, like pretty much every weekend. And she got really into it, you know, and she's still super into it. But yeah, like, you know, I almost want to, I've been reading a lot about, teaching resilience, you know, to your kids and stuff like that. And really good ways is just this kind of thing. Like, you know, we'd go on these long hikes and it would rain and I'd be like, she'd be like, okay, you know, carry me back. I'm like, I'm not carrying you. You know, you gotta walk, you know, you made it this far. Like you're gonna walk back and, little things like that. But, you know, I wanna kind of take it a, you know, keep going. And I don't really always
Yeah,
know like what's
seizing
the
those
next.
opportunities to get out, even though there's a lot of people, even though all that stuff, just like doing it, like keep exposing them to nature, keep pushing that curiosity button. It keep going even though it's raining. And then also because of the inflation and desire to be outside with everybody, there's a lot of new things popping up, a lot of new gatherings. There's ton, like 14 new primitive skills gatherings in the last few years. And like I've got it on my docket for this summer to just go hit as many of them as I can. Because
That's
my
awesome.
son's favorite thing is rabbit stick and winter count, the ones that we consistently do. It's like the highlights of his year. And he just disappears into a tribe of, similarly aged kids, and they all have their knives and machetes and hatchets and bows and arrows, and they're just like running wild, trapping mice and bow fishing and doing everything that they can and learning tons of stuff. There's really good youth teachers at those events. So then the parents can learn stuff too and take classes. And so those are happening all over the place. There's a couple
That's
great
cool,
like,
yeah.
directories online. I can send
Yeah, I'm going to have to get some of that offline from you and
yeah.
add it to this and, you know. But yeah, that's the kind of stuff I'd love to like share with people more. And I want to go to do something like that with my daughter. I think my youngest, I don't know if she could do it, but maybe I'll just throw her into it. Whatever, she'll figure it out.
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
She hates bugs right now. So she's like, she freaks out when she doesn't have shoes and her feet get muddy, you know, so she's like still, she's kind of, really...
You'd be surprised when there's a, you know, a big group of kids that are fully into it and, you know, right. mudded from head to toe. And,
yeah,
just, you know, once they see the bliss that others are having with it, it changes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. Well, thanks so much, man. Thanks for like what you're doing and being here and sharing with everyone.
Yeah, of course.
Some of the behind the scenes, from Alone and
right. Yeah. Great adventure. Glad I could go do that.
Yeah.
It was a great reset for me. And yeah, definitely was missing it this fall. As like September rolled around, I was like, man, I should be going doing something like that again every year. Like
go out, do some sort of backcountry or,
yeah,
you know,
and just that solid alone time and, you know,
right,
deep meditation and reset for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been meaning to do that, just like, you know, go out into the woods and eat some mushrooms and just, you know, disappear.
Totally. Yeah, it's
a day or two. I mean,
so similar to that, man, and like would actually go really well together, actually, in like an experience for sure.
Right. Because, yeah. it kind of helps to get you into that state of mind, but I'm sure just being out there for like 21 days is going to get you in that same state of mind.
It does, but I think they pair really well, and I think they paired really well for our ancestors too.
Right.
You know, that we're living in that directly influenced by nature situation day to day, and then opening up all those neural pathways to absorb that information. Because that was the first science, was just nature observation and,
right.
You know, and it's all, and then religion somehow grew out of that, but
yeah,
it's definitely been influential for us.
Yeah, I've just been this has been kind of a theme that's been coming up lately. It's probably because I'm really curious about this, but I just was started this book that's called The Origins of Satan. Sounds pretty intense.
No, but it's cool.
But it's really like about the way it's actually about how we give like animism to invisible realities that we kind of imagine up. And
sure.
It's really interesting about like how, you know, when people die, for example, around us, or you experience like something really intense, that we sort of imagine, you know, maybe this person is still with us, right? Like someone you love very dearly, they die, and you imagine they're still there with you. So there's like this invisible sort of entity that you give to that experience, you know, just to like explain, or like, you know, when you have some kind of ESP or you have these moments where you're like, oh, I already knew that, or you read someone's mind or something comes up, you know what I mean? Those kind of like synchronicities, that there's this sort of like invisible entity that we attribute to that. And that's why a lot of like paganism, or like if you go back in Greek and Roman, they had all these different gods, and it was almost like all their different explanations of the various phenomenon, like how things grow magically.
Right, they just personified
things,
it, right.
Yeah, they started to like create these names for these invisible entities that were sort of responsible for making things grow, or, you know, creating love and relationship or whatever, all these things. And so that's, you know, when Christianity came on and these other sort of monotheistic religions who were saying, well, there's just one big God, and then there's all these angels and everything else is just like bullshit. That's basically
there's only one imaginary thing, actually.
Right. And then so it's just like we put it all into one big imaginary thing, And then it's like all the other things that you're like worshiping, or like, you know, the elements, or like, you know, pagan ritual, whatever. That all became like versions of God or versions of the devil. Like, cause that's just, you know, no, that's all the devil. And this, there's only one God kind of thing. And, anyway, so it's been really interesting to me that, you know, the way that we kind of created that reality. But I don't really feel like that's really what it is, right? Like the,
yeah,
in nature, there's not really a devil. And even in those old sort of original, like Roman God and stuff, there wasn't really like, and there may be sort of dark energies, but it wasn't like,
Well, so the devil just religion represents government, right? So, or they're the same thing. It's a form of government. It's like, how do you influence a whole bunch of people and get them on the same page so they're operating under the same rules, right? And so the devil is prison, right? It's the same thing. It's just
a way to influence.
Before you
could
enforce
people.
It physically now, you could just mentally enforce it on people and saying it's going to happen in the afterlife, you know?
Right.
Right.
The
but
afterlife.
You got everybody
and
on
then,
the same page.
But then I like this idea of like there's this Hades, or you go into the underworld to like have to like deal with these, you know, sort of treacherous difficulties. And to me, that sort of makes a little more sense. It's like, yeah, okay, it gets tough. Go deep down into a cave and see how dark it is in there. It's pretty intense to be in an actual cave where no light gets to. It's the kind of darkness you've never experienced in your life. When you turn off that flashlight, we were actually down all the way down in Jupiter Cave, which is this this insanely long lava tunnel in Mount Shasta. And we were like a mile back in there, and it was me and two other guys, and two of the guys' flashlights went out, and we just had this one flashlight, and it was like almost going out. It was probably one of the most scary things in my life, because we didn't even have like, we were like, dude, how are we even going to get out of here? Like, you can't even see anything. When the light goes out, it is just, it's beyond pitch black. Like, you don't even it's pretty wild, dude. It messed with your head. And there's
examples. It can be like claustrophobic stuff. It can be like, yeah, totally.
But yeah, so like I can see that kind of thing in nature, like the treacherous darkness, the deep underground, like going through Hades, like all that makes sense.
Yeah.
But when suddenly it becomes like evil, or there's this concept of like, it's out to get you.
Yeah,
or
it's malice, right?
Yeah, it's malice. Yeah, I don't know where that is in nature as much, you know? It's like,
You know, it can seem that way. Like, nature is brutal.
It's brutal.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely brutal. I mean, fall in an ice-cold river, and you're going to be like, damn, you know, it's like.
And like, so I'd never done much big game hunting or anything before I went on alone. Right.
Yeah.
And so we had to go through all these hunter safety training courses and everything to get our hunting licenses up in Canada. And there was like so much emphasis on like having an ethical kill and like putting the animal down as quickly as possible and with as little pain. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about it, and I was like, man, like, I get that in a modern time when you're like hunting for recreational purposes, and you know, or even if you're filling your freezer, it's not something that you need, right? And so you should only take those ethical shots that produce the least amount of suffering. Yes. But then we're also learning about the statistics on how many moose die just overwintering to the wolves, because the snow gets so deep that the moose can't walk around and the wolves can just come and eat them. And the wolves come in and they eat the kidneys and the liver and like all the high fat parts, and then they leave the rest of it and go to the next moose, right? And they just slaughter moose after moose after moose.
Whoa.
And so a huge portion of the population dies every winter, regardless of how many people hunt them, right? And so I'm like thinking about this. I'm like, what is worse, like being eaten alive by a moose,
by a wolf,
or by a wolf? Yeah, a moose for a moose to be eaten alive by a wolf, or you know, to get stuck one lunged instead of two, or to get gut shot by an arrow and go way down and die peacefully. You know, like Like, I don't know about this ethical kill mandatory perspective, right? Like, when nature is just not that way. And I'm in a very natural situation right now. I'm like literally hunting for my food every day, right? And so I took some internet slack for sure, like taking those long shots at those be that bear after it saw me. Which totally for a modern hunter is like an unethical thing to do. Like, absolutely. But my perspective is in a survival situation, which is what I was in. If you get an arrow in that bear, it's gonna die eventually, and you're gonna, as long as you can find it, then you're in the good because it didn't get mauled to death by another bear and die of a thousand cuts. It didn't starve to death over the winter. It didn't, that thing's gonna die a gruesome death. Period. Like, nature's brutal. Like, there's no happy death for a bear.
Right, there's no like real ethical death out there for like these wild animals. I totally get that. No, but I could see why also it's like, in that moment you're like, whatever it takes. But then it's also like, yeah, are you observing the ethical standards? I wonder, I always benchmark that stuff with like the indigenous people of the area, like how do they operate? I don't know. Because it's like they're the ones that maybe have been doing it for the longest. So it's like,
And we kind of romanticize Native Americans' approach and way of life as well. Whereas,
Because I imagine there's a certain amount of brutality in the way that they deal with it. And because they're just, it's a pretty harsh
absolutely.
environment up there. It's like not like they're
Well, the
gonna.
few canyon lands that run across like the plains region of the US that were covered with buffalo or whatever, a great example. Like, the amount of buffalo that were just herded off the cliffs to harvest them, insanely wasteful, but it was efficient. It didn't take a lot of calories to do it. And so that was for the people that had canyon lands in their area, that was their method. They didn't use bows and arrows to hunt the buffalo. They herded
They
them off
herded them
cliffs.
off of cliffs.
Right. And so we do romanticize it a lot,
Right. Like,
when.
that's pretty brutal to like push a, it's like pushing a dude off of a cliff, like to get him, that's pretty rough.
Right, or just, herding hundreds of them off a cliff
Hundreds of them just
and
to
then
eat like three
consuming
of them.
dozens of them. It's just like incredibly wasteful, but incredibly efficient, and when the population and the food supply are in balance, then
So it's just a product of that that environment, and also, what kind of worked, and maybe how they did their prayers around it, because I'm sure that there was a certain amount of like, okay, we're letting this amount go to like to nature, and this is how it works, and this is the cycles of life and all these things. It's, but it's just we do romanticize it because we don't live that close to nature anymore. I mean, it was very obvious to do it that way for them because they were just right there. It was like in it. There was no other option. It was like either I
Well,
do
and we're
this or
also, we are
DoorDash
so
or whatever.
incredibly disconnected from our food supply, having like, grain-raised beef that goes to the slaughterhouse, that goes to the restaurant, that gets cooked for you. Like, we're so disconnected from the whole thing that, like, that's all super brutal as well, right? We're basically like force-feeding these animals into obesity. Like, if we didn't slaughter them when we did, they would only have a couple years left to live anyways. It's not like it's a natural cow anymore. It's like we've tortured them their entire life, into this situation. So, I mean,
It's and it, I mean, being a farmer, having that experience as a farmer, and then I worked on a chicken farm, and so I'd like slaughtered we slaughtered the chickens like, every 2 weeks we'd do this big slaughter, and so I was like right in there. I mean, I've been there and seen that all firsthand. Did it, raised them from little chicklings and whatever, did the whole thing. But and yeah, and it really, it's true, like people don't necessarily connect to that in their minds, you know, or like people are like, well, I'll never kill anything, but I'll take that steak, you know, or whatever, or even, you know, any of it.
Well, for a lot of
But
people, the beginning of our life, we have no idea what the source of food is, other than the menu or the grocery store. It doesn't, little kids don't know that
They
meat
don't
comes
even.
from animals and vegetables. You know what I mean? At a certain age, you start to learn all that stuff, and it starts, you start to be curious about it. But in a natural world, we would know that from the beginning, because we're pulling up that tuber, that root vegetable,
Oh my God. I just keep seeing like my daughter be like, Elmo snacks, because that's like one of her favorite things. It's like she thinks it comes from Elmo, dude. She thinks Elmo's feeding her. Holy smokes. Let's talk about being removed. She thinks a fictional character is actually supplying her food source.
So I think that's one of the most direct ways to our natural gratification centers and dopamine centers and everything, is to get more connected with our food sources.
Yeah, like we go like apple picking and like go, you know, pick strawberries and stuff like that,
And it's
and
such a joy
yeah,
to do
and
that
that
stuff.
yeah,
Absolutely.
that's really cool, but like more of that, I think, yeah, for sure. No, it's interesting. I mean, that's definitely the case even more in like the inner cities and stuff like that. You know, like they were. There's been a lot of studies and talk about that, you know, like where you can go around and ask kids, well, where's milk come from? And they're like, oh, the carton, you know, the grocery store, you know, it's
Totally.
like, it doesn't even, they didn't even know. And that's silly that we don't like take that extra time to really like train people on the basics. Like we're so focused on math and reading that we just skip over a lot of what seems should be like very basic
Yeah,
stuff.
early childhood stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get skipped right over.
Yeah.
Totally.
So I always say like, what's the most important thing? Like, what do you need more than anything else? That's what I ask my, what do you need more than anything else? And it's oxygen, you know,
Keep breathing,
it's like
right?
your number one. So, you know, and then, okay, what's the second thing you need more than anything else? Water, you know, it's okay. So when you're sick, what do you need? Breathe or drink. Okay. What's the third thing you need? And this, I actually had a guest on here that, 'cause I didn't even really think about what the third thing was. But what I'm gonna ask you, what do you think the third, this is my version, but what's the third thing you need more than anything else? After
Yeah, air
oxygen
and
and water.
water. Huh. Well, food is a natural go-to there.
Food, yeah. But it's actually sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Because you cannot survive for very long without sleep. Like you can go like about, there's like the world record or something like 7 or 8 days, and the guy almost went nuts. So that's pretty fascinating because you can go, you know, you can potentially go longer without water than you can without sleep, believe it or not. But and I found out that almost every animal in the world sleeps too. Like it's just a part of what we do.
Yeah,
Because
it's
that's
interesting
pretty.
that life has evolved that way, huh? To have these bursts of energy that requires this downtime of healing, across the board it seems to have done that. Plants do it all, they all sleep.
Everything sleeps, and it's this way of like how you also like cleanse out the toxins and stuff that build up.
Yeah.
And so you get the energy, and then you have to like kind of cleanse it all out. And so you do so many things when you sleep. You know, your body like decompresses your brain and all the things you've learned, and like you know, you work through toxins and you like, you know, all this stuff
Right.
happens while you sleep. So,
That was one of the greatest parts of that alone
freedom too.
experience too, man, was getting back in that true circadian rhythm. Even though the
Right.
day length was really short, and there weren't enough hours in the day to accomplish everything that you needed to, you were exhausted by the time it was dark and you slept solid. You woke
Yeah.
up before it was light, and
Yeah.
got on with everything at the same time as the rest of nature is getting on with it, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that felt really good.
That's something that I notice in my productivity and everything else when I sleep with the rhythms of nature and then when I don't, you know. Mm. And it's a lot of times it's like anxiety and like what you're trying to, you know, whatever, in your head a lot, whatever. It'll keep you up at night. But
that was my biggest fear going into that contest, was that sleeping was going to be difficult.
Because you would just be like up and worried about stuff and
not comfortable or cold or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, man, if I don't sleep, then it's just going to throw everything. Yeah. I know how that goes, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I've experienced some claustrophobia in my life too. Right.
Yeah.
Really like just stress induced claustrophobia basically, and that kept me from sleeping. And then so I'm like, oh man, I'm going to go sleep in a sleeping bag, which is already like feels claustrophobic to me and you know everything. But yeah, once I got into a rhythm out there, like basically after we launched during base camp, I wasn't sleeping very much at all because there's so many people and so much going on and you're
well, so much hype too. I imagine
your experience.
You're just, yeah. Cause it's like, it's like a lot of adrenaline just being on the show and you know,
yeah, totally
the whole thing that you're about to do. And it's like, it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. It took a few days to settle into the experience for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's awesome that you did that, man. And I hope they do like the, you know, it's too bad because I kind of saw, I felt like you were so there that you could have definitely gone the distance. But it's cool that you did what you did, and you know, awesome just to like have that experience. And yeah, man, it's cool what you're doing. Keep it going.
I had a great location, a great tool set, and I was set up for a good long haul. I had that low moment, so that definitely, like, it's taught me a lot, though, and it's reminded me, I'm reminded of that when I find low moments in projects I'm doing right now. You know, it's like, oh, wait, okay, this doesn't have to be this, like, pivot point or this, you know, you can, like, cruise through this and keep on this trajectory, and
yeah,
it's given me inspiration to do that, so.
Nice. Well, thanks, man. Thanks for taking the time to like hang out with me today. It was really cool.
Of course. Thanks. We got to catch up in person.
I know. Sure. I want to come out and I mean, either come out to Maui or if you ever over here, you know, you can always stay with us. But yeah, I'm going to turn this off actually because I'll probably stop it right a second ago. Yeah.